Well, good evening and welcome to this Monroe City Council meeting for August 14th, 2012. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if Edie would take roll call, please.
Councilperson Gary.
Here.
Cuddaback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis. Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
Here.
I did receive late word that Councilmember Davis would not be here tonight. He is out of state. All right, with that, would you please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First up on the agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This time is set aside for citizens to speak to City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We'd like to ask that citizens provide your name and address when speaking to Council this evening and also limit your time to 5 minutes. I do have a few who have signed up. We'll begin with those. And first on the list is Skyler Leifstetter.
Holter.
Lifeschultz. What is it?
Lifeschultz.
Joy. We'll talk about your writing later, no? Please, Skyler, if you would.
Sure.
Lifeschultz. I see it now. Welcome.
Hi there. Actually, I'm here to speak about the espresso stand that's over in the Monroe Shopping Center. And I don't know if it's appropriate if I go first or not. I'm a copy consultant, and I also own a copy repair company. I'm here on behalf of the espresso stand that's down the way there. Did you want to know my address or anything? Or?
Your address and name for the record.
Skyler Lifeschultz, and my mailing address is 4456 West Mercer Way, Mercer Island, Washington. So I've come a long ways this afternoon here.
Well, we're glad that we can get you in person and get home early.
I'm here for the duration, so it's a matter I feel strongly about. Here to speak on behalf of the actual stand itself, my company. We deal primarily with the bikini variety and the scantily clad, rather. It's an industry that's highly scrutinized. It's been highly regulated in years past. There have been some stands that have gone through that haven't been exactly above the board. However, the industry has cleaned itself up immensely. And in my humble experience, we are the second largest company in Northwest that does what we do, which is repair and consulting for espresso stands. They're cleaner than the family stands, if anything else. There's a constant police presence. They're not a nuisance to the public as a whole. And they run clean operations. I do know the other fellow at the other stand. He's also another longtime owner within the industry as well. He runs a tight ship as well. This isn't a nuisance within Monroe. Excuse me. It's not a nuisance within Monroe. The only harassment we've received has been people coming by taking pictures for that particular stand. So if there's any comments or questions, feel free to field them towards me. I'm more than happy to answer anything I can. I will say that the bikini barista stands, they don't pose a threat to public safety or anything else. There's better things to do with our time. Thank you very much.
Council, any questions? Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Which stand was it?
That you were representing?
There's the, excuse me. There's so many different stands out there. The Hillbilly Hotties over near Lewis right there.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Alan Teo.
Good evening, council members, mayor. I'm here tonight to just spend a little time and show my support. I heard through the grapevine. My name is Alan Togley. I actually come all the way from Linwood, and I also own a chain of coffee shops in the area, none of which are in Monroe. Linwood, City of Edmonds, two in Bothell, and one in Woodinville, and so there's five of them. And I had heard through Giovanna, who owns a coffee shop here in Monroe, that there had the council here was taking up the issue of coffee stand regulations. So I thought I'd come out here and lend a voice in support of our unique style of coffee shops. I wanted to say I've been in this business about 6 years. My company's never had any issues, and I was involved in a much similar similar event when the county council took up the issue back in 2009, and be more than happy to answer any questions that you guys might have about the industry and how best to regulate it. There are currently ordinances that the county council has. I think those are great to reference when you guys are considering how best to shape your own city municipal code. I would also add that there are many issues at play here, but knowing the owner of this particular coffee stand that is generating all this interest, I would say she did relocate to Monroe to operate this business. And you should consider that these are people's lives, whose rules and ordinances and municipal codes affect, and the impact that they have on employees, vendors who service these coffee shops, and also the operators who live in your city and vote for all of you. Just on a personal level, I know the owner of this particular coffee shop, and she's a wonderful woman, and she is just a very kind-hearted person. And a little tidbit about her is that some of you may not know, when her company started here in Monroe, it was actually a traditional, and we call in our industry traditional, a lot of people call it family-friendly, it was a traditional coffee shop. And she tried it for a while, and unfortunately, fiscally, it just did not make the fiscal necessities that it required, and so that was a big decision in changing it over to the current theme that it has now, which allows for a handful of employees, all of which come into your city, spend money in your city, and some of which live in your city. So if you guys have any questions, I'll be listening to the in the seating area here. Feel free to direct them. Like I said, I've been in the business 6 years, and I own five of these coffee shops in Snohomish County. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Douglas. All right, Mr. Ron Simmons.
Good evening, Council. I live on Lakeview Avenue. Several weeks ago, an issue was brought before you regarding the easement area of property owned by the city and some of us property owners that abut that property. The issue was that some of us had established fences or have used the property that goes all the way to the ditch. So hence we're using about 12, 15 feet that is actually city property. And we have taken care of that property. We mow right down to the property, or some have used it for children play areas and that kind of a thing. The problem was is that a couple of the lots that were not being taken care of, blackberries have grown up and engulfed their garage and whatever, and so the HOA complained to the city about it. City came out to try to take care of it, but they were blocked from getting to those two lots to take care of it. And so a letter was sent out to us that this would be dealt with at a city council meeting. I was here at the city council meeting, as well as the HOA president and a couple other families represented in that area. An action was taken without any response from us. And I apologize for that. I wasn't aware exactly how city council processes work. I was just kind of thinking in my mind that there comes one notice and then a second notice, and you know, some things apparently it does and some things it doesn't, which I learned later. So then we began to talk about it and try to figure out a way to make, maybe we can work with the city on this, and we were under the assumption there was some communication going on with the city, which I guess wasn't correct. So then we received a letter indicating that we needed to remove all permanent structures within a 45-day period. So, which kind of alerted us more that, oh, something's not happening here. doesn't seem to be communication. So we're here tonight to communicate. There's four of the five families affected here tonight. We're here to represent us and to see if we can work out a system with the city that allows us to continue to use the property and take care of the property, which eliminates expense from the city from having to do that. We know that in that process, in that discussion that evening, I believe it was Councilman Gamble, I believe, that asked whoever was representing the city here at that point. He noticed that there was grass growing all the way down, was being taken care of, and Councilman Camp, I'm sorry. And the representative of the city, and he was questioning if that was okay, and the representative of the city said, yeah, we're happy for that. We like that, because that means they take care of it. We don't have to take care of it. We are looking at the opportunity of contracting a landscaper. Us five families are fully happy to volunteer to take care of all this property so that the city would not have to worry about it. We understand your hesitancy on behalf of the city to just say, well, we had five families volunteer, but what if three of them move next year? And then who takes care of it? So we're kind of looking in to see if we can get a contract with a landscaping company, 4 or 5 year contract with them, see if they'll take care of it. We'll stand the expense through our HOA, so it would be an agreement between the HOA and the city, or to establish some set pattern that lets you know that this issue will be taken care of. Three of the five families have lived there 15 years. That's how old that development is. The other couple of families have been there close to 10 years. We've all been part of the community. We're all city supporters. None of us are trying to claim property. It's not ours. We fully understand all of this belongs to the city, but we've enjoyed using it. Don't get me wrong. This is for our interest also. We've enjoyed using it. But we would like to continue to do that, but continue to help the city with their situation also. So we just want to come present that to you tonight, see if we get some delay to the letter, action of the letter, that we might be able to work out an agreement with the city that would be a help to the city as well as to us. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Simmons, if I might ask you,
yes.
There are five homes that you are representing here tonight.
Well, I'm not technically represent. Well, four of us are here.
Okay, four of you here. And I believe there are how many total, Paul? Or
Jacob?
I'm sorry.
It's been a while. Six, somewhere in there.
There were five on the letter.
That was using, but how many part of the total?
22.
There were 22 homes.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's where the concern comes, is that we have the potential for 22 homes in I don't want to use the word encroaching, but using the a good portion of those homes not maintaining that property. So you're here to say tonight that as the homeowner association, you're looking at maintaining that area for all of the homes?
That's correct.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that for council, not just specific to the four or five homes that are using it, but for all of the homes.
That's correct. In other words, we're saying if we solve the problem, does the city still feel like they need to enforce this?
Councilmember Kim.
Thank you. So are discussions in place with the city department at this time, or is this the first year hearing about this?
This isn't the first I've heard of the idea, no. And I believe that Mr. Simmons has been talking with Vince a little bit.
Yes, I have.
If I'm correct. And I supervise Vince, so I've been discussing with Vince also. Mm-hmm. There are some concerns about logistically how to work that out, and then also the legal aspect of essentially allowing them to. If the issue is structural, that's one thing. If the issue is maintenance, that's kind of another. They're almost two separate deals.
Okay.
So if there's a structure on the property, that's a specific issue in and of itself. And then the maintenance of the property is kind of a separate issue almost.
So is this an option that we can investigate, or is this something we have to just choose at a later time to discuss?
I certainly wouldn't have that answer tonight. Okay. I think that would be something that we'd have to run by a city attorney to see if there were some legal options to pursue with the HOA.
Can we have that as an agenda item in one of the near meetings?
Yeah, we can talk about that at the time this evening as we look at our future. But notice has gone out with 45-day, and that 45-day ends on September 10th. So less than 30 days now.
Okay? Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. That's all that I have signed up this evening, but as always, I'd like to open the podium to anyone else in the audience who'd like to address council at this time. Just ask that you provide your name and address for the record. And again, time limit to 5 minutes, if you would. Hello.
Hi. I'm Javonna Edge. I live at 310 South Lewis Street here in Monroe. I moved out here to Monroe, and I do own a business here. It's the Hillbilly Coffee Company located at the, 429 Butler Avenue, but it's in the parking lot of the grocery outlet. I started out as a family-friendly stand, and it did not work for me. My rent is extremely expensive on that property, and I couldn't make it. Could not make it as a regular stand. Was it worth losing my house and my cars and my horses and my stuff? Or was it worth trying something different? So I chose to try something different. And it has helped me a lot. I dealt with before employees who would steal from me because they weren't making enough money, so they felt the need to take money from me, which was sinking me in itself. And I have employees now who actually want to come to work. They don't take money from me because they're making money. And they're totally reliable, nice girls. And I really work hard to hire girls that are clean and sober and nice and happy. And they treat all customers, men, women, whatever, nice. I just think here in Monroe, we have a lot more issues to deal with, like the homeless people and the drug addicts and... It's just my bikini stand at the other end of town really isn't causing any issues for anyone. I also had a Monroe police sergeant's daughter working for me, and I figured that, you know, if I have a sergeant for the police department, his daughter working in my business, it must not be that bad. So, you know, I guess if the policeman lets his kid work there, isn't that horrible. So if you guys have any questions, I'm ready to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Juliana Crawshaw, and I live at 24531 144th Place Southeast in Monroe, and I'm here about the coffee stand by grocery outlet, and I want to just say, to clarify, I'm not here because of the issue is not whether we have problems with the coffee stand or the owner of the coffee stand. We're very grateful for people, new people coming to Monroe, and we welcome them with open arms. The issue is the zoning and whether this is constituted as an adult entertainment business. And according to your Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 5.48, as I read it today, it does constitute as an adult entertainment business, and it should be zoned for that. It should go into the adult entertainment zoning. And one of the things, I'm not going to read it all because I'm embarrassed to read it, to be honest with you. But part of the two things I will point out that I will publicly say is the women having their tushies exposed constitutes as adult entertainment. Two, anything that arouses the public constitutes as adult entertainment. Now, my question for the business is, are they selling coffee for the purpose of selling coffee, or are they selling coffee for the purpose of bringing in business for something else? That is the question tonight. And so I believe that the wisdom would be to sit down with the coffee owners of both businesses. I've never been to the one down by Fred Meyer, but I have seen the one by Grocery Outlet. And my concern as a citizen here and as a parent is we have families that come through to Grocery Outlet. We have little children and mommies and daddies, and we have families going through our town. And what do we as the city council, and what do we as people in this community want our city known for? We're having Tie Lake. We're going to have all the events going on there, people coming through to go skiing and all these things. So if it's, you know, Pete, that is a very open area for everybody to see. Going into Grocery Outlet, do we want our children to see that sort of business taking place? One of the pastors called me today, and I won't say who he is because I'm not going to name drop. That's not why I'm here. But one of the girls was sitting on the sill of that business. That's not appropriate for a coffee stand. Adult entertainment, if that's what they want to do, that's not my business. I can pray about it, but that's none of my business to speak into. I'm here tonight to say, is this adult entertainment? That's the question on the table. If it is, we have a place zone for that, I believe. And that's where the business should be moved to. If the owner has a problem financially, I'm sorry about that. We all in the community who pray will pray for her and love her and help her in any way we can there. But it doesn't negate the fact that adult entertainment is adult entertainment, and the adult entertainment is zoned here in a certain area. We have no buffer zone here because of that. So that's what I have to say, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Aurora Anderson, and I live at 14120 80th Avenue Northeast, Kirkland, Washington. And from my understanding, I believe that the city ordinance says that we as Bikini Baristas, I work for Giovanna, who is a very professional woman, and she hires professional girls. I can understand the concern about somebody seeing a girl sitting on the windowsill, but is it unfamily friendly to go to a beach and see women walking around in their bikinis? And also, if it was adult entertainment, from what I believe is if it was adult entertainment, we would have a stripper pole in our stand and the girls would be using it. So, I mean, I can see other people's concern, you know, about having a bikini stand there, but for us to be completely harmless and, you know, I see men and I have women who come through also. Yes, people, you know, sometimes bring their children through also, but, I mean, nobody really has, you know, their butt hanging out, or, you know, their areolas or nipples showing or anything like that. You know, we are covered up for sure, definitely. But I don't see why it would be not family friendly to go to a beach and see girls in their bikinis as well. So if you guys have any questions for me, I'd be glad to answer them for you. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no one else, that concludes our portion of the meeting this evening, designated for citizens to comment to council. We'll move now on to our first study topic session. Before we do, I just want to say how over the last 3 years as mayor, I have had the pleasure of working with, communicating with, dialoguing with, doing a number of things with other mayors in the Valley and throughout Snohomish County, but one in particular has been I've really appreciated the relationship with this mayor, and I'm very glad that she is here tonight. Just want to say that it's a pleasure to have you here, Mayor Eslick from Sullivan, and look forward to the discussion this evening. But just also want to say Mayor Eslick has been an integral part of helping to propose and develop the IPZ, Innovative Partnership Zone. Yeah, I helped say that three times. With a focus on recreation. And quite frankly, if it wasn't for her and some folks that she has gathered or the team that she's put together, I don't think that we would have seen much progress with regards to bringing that to Olympia and hopefully getting approval of our IBC application next year. So she's got a lot of creative ideas, and just a pleasure to have her as a fellow mayor here in the Valley. So with that said, our first item tonight is student council representative. Mayor Heslick, you brought a guest here this evening, Russell, I believe, and who is a past participant. Why don't we have you introduce him?
I'd love to introduce him. Russell, actually, we started this student representative program about 12 years ago. We were the first in the state, if you could believe that. We have a magnificent person on our staff, and that's Donna Murphy, who, when you put her on a task, she takes care of it. And so she tried to do some research on it, and nobody in the state had done it. And it was really too bad, because we could see the value in it, even back then. But tonight I have Russell Weida, if you'd like to stand up here with me. Russell was our last year's student representative, and he came to us as a junior last year. And we do an application process, and we involve the school, and we ask the principal to submit some applicants that he chooses and thinks that might be good participants with us. And so Russell was one of them. Russell also applied again the next year, and actually, this has been 3 years ago, hasn't it? Yes. Oh, I'm so confused. He wanted to do it again. He enjoyed it so much. And I, as the mayor, said, you know, we really need to give a chance to some of the other kids. And so Russell, it didn't stop Russell. He came to all the meetings anyway and sat in the audience and still participated. So he's a little unusual as a student rep, in my opinion. But he is amazing at what he does. And he's going to college this next year. He just signed up today, and that's why he was a little late. But I'd like to introduce to you Russell Weida, and I think he's got a few words to say about that position that he held with the city.
Hi, my name is Russell Weida, as Carolyn Essek just introduced, and the student representative experience was really one that I think shaped my future. Personally, I applied my sophomore year, didn't get it, applied my junior year, got it, and I had a great experience. Just the exposure to local politics and local government is something that, even if I don't pursue anything in the future political-wise, has helped me to grow as a person and in my future be less ignorant of the way things work. Going to the meetings and sitting up on council and being treated as an equal to the other council members is something that, on its most basic level, is really enriching as an individual. Most kids at a high school that I talk to would say, oh, you know, I hate this, I hate that about the city, this needs to be changed, but, you know, and when you say, well, what are you going to do about it, they're like, well, we don't have any say anyway. And so that's something that I'm not only did I sit on the council, but I really hope to innovate the position. And so I created a survey that we distributed to all the high school students and took the results that asked questions like, do you have any issues with the city? What would you like to see fixed? You know, how much say do you think the youth have? And the results were not surprising to me that they thought they had none and they thought they should have a lot. But when asked what they do, they said nothing. But what we did was, with Donna Murphy's help, I compiled the results. And there were actually things that the city wasn't aware of that were fixed, like some playground equipment, some that was wasn't broken yet, but could have been better, that was fixed, and some other issues that there was focus on. And so that's, to those students, I went back and said, here's the things that have been fixed since your say has been given at a city council meeting. And they were pleasantly surprised and really felt good about that opportunity. And so when I wasn't selected as student representative again my senior year, I still went to the meeting because I still wanted to be involved and figured I couldn't stop harassing the council just because I wasn't up there. And so I went, and it really did help to shape me even more. And The reason I was late tonight is at orientation at the University of Washington today, and I'll be studying business and political science there. And the political sciences, I've gained an interest in politics and running for office and hope to run for office someday, and I've been involved in some local politics and really been able to introduce myself to it and get comfortable with it. And so the benefits to the city for having a student rep are, you know, that opinion that sometimes adults just don't think of. You know, I'd sit up there and after they go down the line of council members giving their opinion on an issue, you know, Mayor Eslick would say, "Well, Russell, what do you think?" And sometimes I'd say something and council goes, "I never thought about it that way." You know, it's just a different mindset and another voice. And, you know, the student rep doesn't get to vote. They're not elected, but their position up on council is still valuable. And so it was very enriching for me. Personally, I was nominated by the city for the Associated Washington Cities scholarship, and I won it, one of four in the state that won a $1,000 scholarship from the Association of Washington Cities. And so, you know, on so many different levels, it enriched me personally, and I think it was a benefit to the city, and I think that more cities in the state should have it, and, you know, anywhere that is possible. So that's my spiel. So if there's any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
If there is, I'm sure, and I want to get to those. I also want to give Councilmember Camp real quick an opportunity to speak before we have a question for you, because I know that there's going to be several. But Councilmember Camp brought this proposal to City Council and has interacted with the City of Sultan in trying to create duplicate the process. And so let's hear from Councilmember Camp first. And don't move, because I saw two lights go on right away. So.
Actually, thank you very much, you and Mayor Eslick, for coming tonight. We really appreciate it. There's no way I could get this kind of information to this crowd and have them understand to the depth of the community. I have to take one side note. Ben, thank you very much. He did all the coordination with the mayor and was on Murphy and to coordinate getting the mayor here tonight. I really appreciate it. Actually, you covered all the points I was hoping you covered in my little spiel, so I'm going to kind of throw it open. But the only question I would have is there anything in particular that you might want to see a little bit different?
That's actually something that I'm glad you brought up, because it's something I planned on saying in between classes and orientation and trying to sleep. I didn't get to writing a speech. But no, I don't know that it's necessarily something I'd change, but something I would advise to focus on as a council and as a mayor having a student rep is to really make sure they're involved and make sure they know what their position is. I think in some ways I went above and beyond the call of duty as student rep, and I've seen reps before and after me that maybe didn't fully understand the position. And it does depend on what you want, but what I've seen as the most effective way is pretty much for the student rep to be a council member, to be equal to you minus your vote. Being able to have a discussion, being able to give their input instead of just at the beginning during council comment or however you have it structured, giving a report of the calendar at the school and, you know, maybe some issues that have come up. But really having them be an integral part of the council is something that is, I think, the best way to manage it is to have it clearly communicated to the student rep that we want you here not only to bring your the district calendar and let us know what's going on, but also be an active part on the council.
Thank you.
Councilor Gamble.
So I had, you know, a question. How did you feel about public speaking when you were a sophomore?
I was terrified. I wasn't involved my freshman year in anything in school government-wise, and the end of my sophomore year, I ran for ASB representative for my class and ran unopposed, so And the bell was ringing at the end of the day when I gave my speech, and I said, well, no one's running for me, so you don't have a choice, vote for me. And that was my campaign speech. So, and so I really was nervous for those 10 seconds it took me to say that. It wasn't really a problem.
How was this experience?
And so, you know, it wasn't until my junior year that even besides a student rep that I got other positions where I had to talk in front of class, larger than class sizes. And at first, the idea of speaking in front of a prestigious group like a city council and a bunch of scary people with a lot of power, as I saw it, was terrifying. And I had known personally a couple of council members and the mayor, so that made it a little less intimidating, but I was not a public speaker when I started, and I had to jump in, and it did. It really helped me to develop as a public speaker and get used to it, because I had to, because the mayor calls on you, and it's like, oh, spotlight's on me, I gotta say something, so...
Well, you did a good job. Yeah, it definitely shows. And it's number one on the list of the people thing people fear the most. And death is number two, so... Yeah. Oh, Council Member Camp. Why don't...
Camp.
That's
a combination.
Yeah. We've got sample ordinance and proposed resolution and application. Any thoughts on those three items, or should we have been... discuss the process going forward and why we are looking at these. Sure. Councilor Devin.
Russell, were you the only representative that served on it for a full school year?
Yeah,
or were they rotating?
The way it was set up, and actually that leads me to another thing that I've thought would maybe improve the program is there's the student rep and then an alternate in the system that Sultan uses. And in my case, which was an odd one, when I was selected as a junior, it was actually a senior that was the alternate, a senior that I had come to really respect. So that was a little bit of an experience, you know, getting picked over her. But one thing I would recommend is choosing an alternate the year below or someone who's going to be in it again, because then they attend the meetings that the student rep usually can't, and if Monroe's anything like Sultan, your student rep's going to be someone who's really involved and every once in a while might miss a meeting because of another involvement. And so that gives the alternate some experience, you know, going to a meeting, and even if they don't say a lot, just getting that exposure. Because I know for me, the first year of it, it was like, what is this language they call government? It didn't make any sense, you know. And so by my second year attending the council meetings as a citizen, I understood most of what was said. So having a student rep and having the alternate as sort of a feeder program for the next student representative, I think would really, really benefit. And maybe the student rep and alternate could even coordinate, you know, hey, why don't you go to this meeting and, you know, get some experience? Because that's definitely something that I think would have helped me, is getting a year's of a little bit of exposure to then becoming student rep the next year.
So do you think a two-year commitment is something a student could fulfill? You know, doing an alternate one year and then being the rep next year?
I think it's definitely possible with a little sleep and a lot of coffee. But, I think that especially being the alternate, you know, that's not a huge burden. It's something that you're kind of, it's like a trainee position on a low scale, you know, sort of getting the exposure. So.
Did you sit on any of the city committees that the city might have had?
Yeah, but they were disconnected from the student rep program. I was on the mayor's Blue Ribbon Committee for rebuilding the Boys and Girls Club that burned down in December of 2010. They were looking for student reps specifically for that, and I applied and was selected. But that's something that, and this, you know, maybe an idea is to have the alternate serve on a planning commission or something as a student rep, if you have something in place like that to get some exposure without the high exposure of city council.
And you, did you sit on the ASB for mm-hmm. Sultan?
Yeah, I was
on the standing committee. And I saw in this ordinance that, or this resolution, that that's a requirement, it sounded like. And I'm wondering, is did you feel it was essential to have that connection being on the ASB and then being on council? I mean, it sounds like a good idea. I just want right. to, it cuts out other students who might be interested.
I don't know either if that wasn't necessarily enforced or maybe the language in there is confusing. It's not required that they be on student council. I think maybe what the language in there is referring to is the attempt at having the student rep perform as the liaison between the city council and the student council. But I would definitely be careful about trying to require that, because I know at Sultan we try to get the position and there's a big argument, and so it's they were sometimes school officials don't want the city stepping on their toes and want them to let their run their program. And so I'd say if that were going to be a consideration, maybe just in the application say it's encouraged to have someone involved in ASB, because I know the student rep, at least two student reps before me, the one after me and myself, were all on student council, and I've saw in all of them it was beneficial to have that connection. So
okay. Yeah, just and I might be misreading this. I see it in it's the resolution.
I read that as well. I think it's really an alternative, right? So it's like it's these two, or it can be this. So it's okay. Not really excluding them. Alternatively, or at the direction of the mayor and the council approve, it could be an ASB officer. It's like A and B hold, but C is more of an optional. At least the way I read it, C is more.
Yeah, when I read shall to me is a definite, not a sure. Could be. So it says, you know, the student representative shall be an officer of the associated student body at high school or a class representative at Monroe High School. I just wanted to make it clear that my preference is to open it up to the student body. And most likely you are going to have people who are on the ASB apply, because that's an interest, but making sure that we kind of have an open process. And the other comment was just about, it says Monroe High School. So I didn't know if, and I know we had talked about this briefly before, opening it up to leaders in learning or Sky Valley Education, or does that cover it?
That's right. Well, at this point, I'm just hoping that we can get the program started. So sure. It was good to have a central point and a central administration we're dealing with, which would be Monroe High School. Once it's established and we know that it's going to work, and from the sound of it, it sounds very positive, then we can look at opening it up, and then how we would have different representatives. Leaders in learning would have a different they'd have different areas that they'd be concerned about, because they're not located directly at the high school campus themselves. That's the kind of thing. So at this point, it's just Monroe High School, but things can always expand. Okay.
Council, do we have any more questions for Russell specific?
Oh, yeah.
And if not, we can talk about the resolution.
I have one comment, if I may, just off of the last little discussion is, we've talked about, or we did when I was involved at the high school and city council, of having kind of a committee get together so that the committee could develop ideas to be presented then to the city council. And so, and in Sultan, there's less high school aged institutions. And so for Monroe, maybe that's an idea of having a representative per building, maybe middle schools and high schools and alternative learning. And that committee could get together and have one representative on the council. So that's also an idea.
Mayor Eslick, anything to add?
I'd just like to say Russell Reed is an amazing young man.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be running for office someday.
I know how campaigning
works. Councilmember Gamble.
Just one final note. I just wanted to say that you've made a very wise decision on the school that you went to.
Oh, Lord.
That's awesome.
Russell, thank you very much. We've got some deliberations and continued discussion here. Don't leave just yet. We might have some other questions for you, but Councilmember Petovac did bring up a couple of comments with regards to the resolution itself. So we'll have you take a seat and we'll continue the discussion on the resolution if there is any further, and we will be bringing this back for a decision at another time. But thank you. I appreciate this.
Thank you.
Job. So Councilmember Kodobek did have some questions with regards to the resolution, and maybe that we should change that word shall to will, or whatever. Could.
Or should, yeah, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, or should, or yeah, whatever. But anything further with regards to the resolution that you've seen? And I'm asking Councilmember Kodobek directly because she had the floor last. With regards to
just have like a little bit more discussion about opening it up to Sky Valley Education and Leaders in Learning. They're alternative high schools, and there's over 700 families that go to Sky Valley Education. It is a big, you know, and so it's all run through the school district, though. That is the central point. It is Monroe School District, so.
Yeah, just one point.
Sure.
At the initial discussion, I had several members, after I just talked to the principal, and he was agreeable to it, and I brought it down here, and we started discussing with city staff, and I watched school group, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And no offense to the staff here, but unmanageable. When I looked at the ordinance that Sultan had, it's clear-cut, it's straightforward, and it's easy to follow. That's why I was thinking, we just stuck with Monroe High School at this time. Set a date to reconsider in 1 year after we've had the program run for 1 year and have a representative here. And if it's working and we're happy with it, I like the idea of the committee that we just heard, which would be excellent. We could probably start that up very quickly, even before the end of the year. I was concerned about the possibility of multiple representatives for different groups and whether or not we'd have too many student representatives here. That was a consideration. So that's where I'm going with this one. I'm more than willing to open this up to the other organizations. But since we're just getting off the ground here, I'm hoping that we can keep it as focused as we can to at least give it a good start.
I'll save my comments.
Okay.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. What's the time frame for this? Is it school year to school year? Is it calendar year?
It's school year to school year, right? Okay. So it's September through
June
or August?
June. Usually the students are very active in the summertime.
Right.
So it has not worked well for them to come. It works best if they're just here from September to June.
Right. So it is September to June. Okay.
And then I read that it said something about the fact that the student representative can speak during citizen comments. It didn't sound like they have interaction during the council meetings. Is that true?
If I could ask the mayor about that part, where you were bringing Russell into the conversation?
Yes, we do. Especially when Russell reminds me that he's there. we make sure it's okay with the council if it's a discussion that they want input from, and usually they would like that. So it is.
So
it's very helpful to have their conversation.
It's not part of the ordinance, but this is at the discretion of the mayor and the council.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And we allow for that in other meetings as well, when we have individuals who are in attendance, you know, with regards to specific issues. If there's questions, we've done that before, opened it up to input from members. So certainly as it relates to issues that would have an effect on the student body here in Monroe as a whole, I don't think that there would be any reason why we would not ask for some input if they have some. So leave that option open. That's
my
only.
And then my last comment involves the membership as well. I agree with what Councilmember Camp said about let's get something going. Because I think we can get that done faster, but I would also agree with opening it up at some point and looking, and not just the public sector, but also the private sector. We have private schools as well that might have student body, officers and presidents and so forth. So I'd like to see it be open to students of the high school age, not just focused on Monroe High School.
That may be something that is a good point, and Russell brought it up with regards to the committee. We could could continue to have one individual serving as a liaison. That liaison could represent many bodies, not just the student body at Monroe High School, but if there is a committee that the school district would like to formulate and have input and provide direction, the student representative could provide input based on the committee's directions or needs. Something to consider there. Again, to Councilmember Camp's comment, staff and Councilmember Camp, principal of the high school and so forth, it became bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger to the point of really being unmanageable at this point. So it was, let's start off strong, let's start off clean, simple, and then develop the program as we move forward. So all good ideas and certainly things that we can look into and develop as the program goes on. Councilmember Cutback.
Thank you. So just a question, is the representative a voice for youth in our community, or is the primary purpose to be a liaison between Monroe High School and the council?
It's both.
Yeah, it's both.
Please. That's what I did serve as the representative of the youth. I did a couple times contact the administration of the middle school consultant to get an opinion or view on something. So it is of the youth,
right,
in the community.
Well, that was just my point. I worry about, I know we want to start off and get the program going, but Sky Valley Education and Leaders in Learning are both part of our community, and they're not different. I would hate to classify them as different groups. They all represent youth in our community. And, you know, a process, you know, putting up a flyer saying, hey, if you're interested, apply, and having it go to that principal of that school and then passing on two or three applications to the mayor to look at two or three per school. I just think when you close it off just to Monroe High School, we have such a big, you know, Sky Valley Education, over 7,800 families, it doesn't send the right message. You're disenfranchising a big group of the youth right there by only picking Monroe High School. I don't think it'll be overwhelming or too big to put up a flyer in other areas, have the principal wheedle those down, if they're willing. Now, they might not be willing. Yeah.
Which principal? Is there a principal of Leaders in Learning? I don't know how this is structured.
There was a principal at Sky Valley Education Center, Karen, John Lombardi at the high school, and there's a Leaders in Learning. So
now we have three principals who have to coordinate the selection of one representative to represent all three organizations. That's my concern. That's why I'm going in just for Monroe High School, just at the start. In 1 year, well, like we said, with the committee, you could have that. You could probably start that almost immediately. I would just like to see, get a representative picked up and see if we can use that representative throughout the different organizations and represent as many people or as many students as well.
Yeah, I understand. And I'm not going to vote against this because we're not. I just want to speak plainly that with such a big group of youth in other parts of just Monroe High School, it might send a negative message of we're only selecting someone from a high school right from the start.
To see if we get the program to work. And that's the only point I have. I see nothing wrong with large and wiping this and opening up as much as we can, but keeping it central enough or trim enough that we don't overburden the students. We don't have a selection process that becomes too complex for the principals. They're the ones who are going to have to determine who they're going to send forward.
Sure. Yeah,
so it's additional work for the school administration.
Yeah.
I want to keep it as simple and straightforward as I possibly can. The process I saw from Sullivan is pretty. I mean, it's very good. It's interviews with the principal and eventual sitting down the recommendations down to the mayor.
Sure.
So, I'm sorry. Is there the interviews are with the mayor and with?
I'm glad you brought this up. The process is that, yes, the applications go through the principal, and then they forward X amount of applicants. We have a committee set up, so it's not just the mayor that is interviewing, but the mayor is part of the interview panel. We usually choose a citizen and a couple of council people, maybe a staff member, you know, always an odd number. And we do the scoring process just like we do other interviewing situations. And I think we sent you the interview questions, right? So, and then ultimately, it is up to the mayor to choose the person through the recommendation of the interview committee. So we always have that choice of, for instance, if it was somebody from Leaders in Learning, and Russell and I were talking about this, and my first comment was, the kids that are leaders in learning don't always finish the whole year, or they are done in the middle of the year because of their schooling, right? And so what does that do to the position that we have here? Well, ultimately it's your decision on who you choose. And really, it's such a positive exercise for all the kids to go through that what does it hurt? Nothing. Really. So not a bad idea. I'm thinking we need to do the same thing. We did not open it up to our options.
Which, well, based on your experience when you first, well, I don't know if you were involved with the first cut set, but do you think it should stay narrow at this point for this initial part of the program, or should we expand
it? I don't think it hurts one bit to expand it. No. As Russell reminded me, again, you're touching so many students by just offering it, letting them think about it. What does that mean? Maybe one of the teachers can elaborate it with the class. There's so much, there's not enough. There's just never enough interaction between school and government. And if we don't get in there some way to engage those kids, we're not going to have enough to be sitting up here. So I love it. I think it's a great idea.
If I could just make a comment. I think by putting it out there doesn't mean that we're going to get a flood of overwhelming. What it means is you're giving all the kids an equal opportunity to apply no matter what program, educational program they're in. And that sends a very positive message to them that, hey, boy, I've been Leaders in Learning and I can still apply and do this. They care about me too, what I can say, the difference I can make in government. That's all. I don't want us to be overwhelmed. I want to get it started. I'm 100% supportive of it. You know, all of that. I don't want to send a negative message to a group of our youth who are out there who then say, why didn't I have the opportunity? Well, we wanted to keep it narrow. We wanted to get it started. That might not satisfy, their desire to get involved.
I don't think that it was negative in any sense.
No, I know that. I'm not...
I don't think it was intended to be negative. I don't think anybody was approaching it to say that we're just going to disenfranchise somebody. We were looking at trying to create a program, and Councilmember Camp has been at the head of this, and really was just modeling it after the Sultan program. So, Councilmember Geary?
Thanks. I did want to take issue with the word disenfranchise. And pretty strong for a program that's just trying to get off the ground. I think this is very positive. I'm okay with starting it narrow, but I certainly agree with expanding it like everyone else has said. I think this is going to be a great thing. I look forward to it being done, and whether we do it now or later, it's going to be a great opportunity for everybody. And this, I don't see how this excludes anyone. Keeping it simple at the beginning is great, and expanding it to everybody at whatever time frame we do that will be great as well. So thank you.
Councilmember Gamble.
I don't see how, I understand what Councilman Kettlebeck is saying, 100% agree. I know it wasn't the intent in any way, shape, or form. But it's just, kids are kids, and they would feel disenfranchised if I didn't have that opportunity type of deal. We have an opportunity to, to take care of that from the beginning and create a resolution that's more along the lines of, children that are attending an accredited school in the grades from 9 through 12 in the Monroe School District area, whether it's public or private, have the opportunity to apply, all of the principals for that area would oversee, their corresponding schools, and then you can even put in there that these are the schools that currently have opted in, if you want to say. And Monroe High School is our first one. that we just structure it in a form. So that's simple, but it's in the resolution itself from the city's perspective. We're structuring it in a way that's very, you know, inclusive. As advertising also to our partners, you know, within the Scholastic community to say, you know, hey, this is open to all schools. For those that, you know, don't want to apply, all you have to do is approach the city and maybe just structure a resolution out of it. Just a thought.
I think before, I think it's something that Ben, if you would as well, and Councilor Camp, before we extend it out to the other school, I think this is probably important that we reach out to the school district itself, because whoever is representing all of the students is going to have to be open and able to connect with all of those students. And so before we commit somebody from Leaders in Learning to having to represent the students of the high school, which means that there would have to be some, you know, interaction with the high school as well as with Sky Valley. I think that the school district should have some say into whether or not they want to expand it that far. Before we make a decision to expand, I think it would be important that we reach out to the school district and ask if they want to have it expand at this point, because there's going to be a much broader responsibility for the student rep at that point than just having a representative from the high school. Russell has said that he reached out to the other groups and he went above and beyond what the expectations were for the student rep, and great for him. Not every student may be so willing to do that. So I hear both sides. I hear all that was said tonight. Before we make a decision, let's reach out and get some feedback from the district office to see what their thoughts are, because there is going to be some broader expectations at that point from somebody who may be coming or representing all of the students from a different different organization. I see Russell's got his hand up over there, so I'm going to call him. You have a comment?
Yeah, and just on the issues of expanding, I think from personal experience, just my sophomore year being nominated by the principal to be interviewed by the mayor and whoever he picks to help was an experience and something that really made me feel good. You know, as a sophomore among many upperclassmen, you know, I was picked, and so I think that just that experience within itself is beneficial to alternative learning groups. But I also think there's a huge advantage of having a student rep from the high school because of that that exposure directly to school administration and directly to connections within the high school where the majority of your students that age are going to be. And I think that getting held up on the city's end isn't really an issue, because I mean, you may get two or three more applicants that take up another 45 minutes in your interview process, but in the big picture, it's not going to be a big undertaking, because ultimately, if you and your committee make the decision that you want someone from the high school because of their value and representation, that's your decision to make. But informing the ordinance, I think that definitely expanding it, because that just puts more work on the principals who could opt out if they so choose.
Thanks. All right, we'll get some feedback, some more consideration. The school year starts in 3 weeks. Yeah.
So we might have a
short term, but we'll communicate with the district office very quickly and have this back to council with that additional input. So,
but thank you.
Very much.
Thank you for considering.
That's great. Well, I'd also like to say thank you to Mayor Esslick and Russell for coming out and
participating. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good evening.
Good luck.
Okay. I'm going to get straight to these. City Administrator Razzle.
Thank you. I just want to take a moment to introduce Mr. Scott Snyder. It's an absolute honor to have him here this evening. He's with Ogden Murphy & Wallace.
And Attorney Snyder is going to be helping us this evening with a number of items that we'll need to have we'll need to have executive session for. With that, I want to, and Attorney Snyder is here specific for those, ask counsel if you'd like to go ahead and enter into those executive sessions now, so we could give Attorney Snyder the ability to get out of here in a decent hour, save some money for the city. That's always an alternative. But, and if counsel is so willing, then we'd take the executive sessions at this time.
Sure.
Yeah. For the members of the audience, that means that what we will be doing is we have four executive session discussion items this evening. So I would anticipate that with those four, we're looking at about an hour and a half in total, maybe more, maybe less, but knowing this council, maybe more. So I just wanted to throw that out and be aware of that. And then we will be returning back into regular session for the purpose of continuing with our study session topics. Actually, we have three items tonight. The first one is pertaining to pricing of property. And I don't know if you were prepared to share the RCW that we'll be using for that. But with that said, we will need staff members to remain. That'd be Mr. Sachs and which one's that? The first one is with regards to the indigent defense standards. Is that correct?
We yes, sir.
Executive session for that.
Okay. Actually, this is an open session.
Oh, it is open session?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then let's go to the executive session to pertaining to pricing of property and potential litigation. Who do we need to staff on that?
We'll need Paul, Brad, and Jeff for sure.
All right, this
is going to be BSC.
I didn't know the language.
Sure. The mayor and the so it's our, the three sections are RCW 4230-1101B, which is regards to the pricing for the purchase of property. 1C, which is which relates to the sale of property, and 1I. Which has to do with legal advice and litigation.
Okay. Ideas, Paul, Brad, Jeff, how long this particular executive session will last, potentially, what we need?
It's in Eastman or number four.
Correct. And
okay, okay, bring that one first. Okay. 20?
20 minutes?
Yeah.
We'll begin with 20 minutes. All right.
And you can come here. You can, of course, come back in and announce further time if you're required.
Very good. All right. So with that said, we will be going into executive session at this time. I'd like to ask members of the audience to leave the chambers, and we will announce when we're back in session.
So is that an hour and a half or 20 minutes?
We're going to start with 20 minutes. I just want you to know that there are three, which could take a total of an hour. That could take an hour and a half.
For some time.
Back in regular session, going immediately into another executive session, and this one is pertaining to potential litigation. The city attorney has the RCW for that one, I hope, too, as well.
I do. It is RCW 3110(1), close parens, parens, small room, or small I.
And Mr. Sachs, Mr. Feilberg, Mr. Popelka, how long do you believe for this portion? This was, let's say, 15 minutes.
Okay, my guess was 20 initially.
Okay.
I have not heard 20.
All right, we'll go with 20. We'll go with 15 because we can always extend. If we go over 20, then we're stuck for 5 minutes sitting around looking at each other. So, okay, with that said, then we will go into executive session for potential litigation for 15 minutes. Session. All right, thank you. Council, just for the purpose of trying to move some things forward, want to ask that we skip to new business item number one to allow for Attorney Snyder to give us some update or some information on that, as well as remind council of a motion as a result of but that can be done at any time. So, all right, so with that said, with council approval, or if it's okay with council, unless I hear any objections, we'll move to new business item number one, and that's the Indigent Defense Standards. And
Mr. Mayor? My name is Scott Snyder, and I've been working on this issue with our clients. I actually go back a little longer. I've been working with the cities of Mount Vernon and Burlington, who were sued about a year ago regarding the provision of indigent defense services by their public defender. Over the past couple years, both the State Supreme Court and the Washington Bar Association have been looking at the issue, which is basically what's the level of service that needs to be provided to indigent defendants in order to meet constitutional standards. This debate's been going on for about 2 years now. In candor, the Supreme Court and the Bar Association have not paid any particular attention to the cities and their estimates of what this could cost. The Supreme Court in July enacted a rule that will be effective initially September 1. It was just extended to October 1st of 2012. It provides a list of requirements. Public defenders are supposed to certify you to your municipal court judge, in your case to the district court, that they meet these standards quarterly. A lot of them are common sense, that you have a private office, you have a telephone, that you'd be available, that you have, some of them are going to be a stretch for some smaller cities, that indigent defendants have access to when needed, expert services, investigative services, interpreters, to mental health professionals to assess their ability to stand trial. Those provisions are mandatory. There's also a state law in place that requires that each city adopt indigent defense standards. The second half, or the more expensive shoe, is going to hit the floor in September 1 of 2013. And at that time, the court requires cities to have adopted caseload standards for their public defender. That can be 400 cases flat or 300 weighted cases. There are certain matters. You're a public defender and somebody comes in and they're arraigned, they say, I want to plead guilty, and it takes 15 minutes. You can weight those down to a third of a case. What we're recommending is that you take this in two steps. One, that you enact a resolution tonight that basically says we adopt the Supreme Court's rule that we're required to adopt, and we start a process asking the staff, the police chief, in conjunction with the courts, the public defender, and the prosecutor to take a look at your caseload. What kind of cases do you have? Are there ways for us to reduce it? Are there costs that need to be covered in the contract? And report back to you over the course of the next 6 months, probably hopefully within your budget session. So our recommendation is comply with the Supreme Court rule, adopt their standards, but then take a good hard look at your caseload standards, report back to you, work with the public defender and your prosecutor in the course to see if there are ways to save money before September of next year.
Okay. You you stated taking action tonight. I didn't think that we were taking action tonight. I thought that we could bring this back.
You absolutely can. I'm sorry. This is not my first Fandango on this one. And as I mentioned, the Supreme Court just extended the deadline from September 1 to October 1. So you do have plenty of time. Yes, sir.
Councilmember Geary.
Thank you. And I appreciate the memo. Very informative, and certainly in favor of your recommendation on the second page with regard to adopting a minimum, just adopt the state standards to get the process moving. What you've got in your last two paragraphs, I think, is wise, and I quite frankly, I think, pretty simple. We should just move forward with that and start a process to get this going. But at the minimum, for now, pass a resolution that says we'll meet the whatever the minimum is, and then work forward from there. I think that's pretty simple to do. And put it on next week or whatever. If that means this is not this doesn't seem like rocket science on this one.
As the mayor's question points out, we will bring you back a revised resolution that reflects the October 1 deadline rather than the September 1. My memo was written before the Supreme Court changed the rule.
That would be great. I was, honestly, I didn't realize that the city, we don't have all those numbers, but we actually do provide a lot of support for indigent defense. I won't say what I was asking the chief to recommending to the chief that we do, but I was also surprised that it's for as little as a misdemeanor case. I mean, we're by so the potential is that we could be laying out some big money here in terms of defense. I use the word good because I think that it's important that we understand people are proven or innocent until proven guilty. But the potential exists here through this ruling that there's going to be some additional cost to the city. The potential exists that there could be some additional cost to the city. I just want the council to be aware of that as we move forward. So, Councilmember Kedek.
Thank you. We might want to know a little bit more ballpark what those costs are going to be as we go through the budgeting process, because obviously we do a calendar year budget, and I know those costs aren't put into place until September 2013, right? I mean, for the what's going to hit us the hardest.
Right, and that's what we're doing in two phases. After you adopt the standards,
right.
The next task, the chief and I just sit down with the public defender and see, is there anything that you're not doing?
Right.
Because to be honest, an experienced public defender who's used to doing this work can do way more than the 400 cases. The 400 cases is based sort of on a new attorney and somewhat inexperienced. In effect, the Supreme Court said, okay, if you're in this area of practice, you can only do this much work. And as you know, a lot of attorneys work as many hours as they can to make the money. So your public defender is going to, in effect, they've been told they're going to have to limit their practice, and that means that their overhead costs, like secretaries and all those things we were just talking about, are going to have to be covered by whatever the caseload limits are. The other part to that that's important is once you get a good case count and you meet with the public defender, would be to sit down at an administrative level and see, are there ways that we can address the tickets we're writing? Are there changes in our laws? Are there things that we have as crimes that maybe shouldn't be as crimes? It's going to be pretty much the same price per case till you get to 400. And once you go over 400, your public defender has to add an additional staff person. The cost skyrockets. So as long as you can keep it, within that box. So the reason I went through that spiel is you're exactly right. During your budget process, you're going to want to not only talk to the public defender, but look at ways administratively, are there things we can do to keep the cost down?
Right. And so I was just suggesting that we kind of don't wait until after January to kind of gather that information, that we do have to spend the fall gathering that information. So if we are going to get hit with additional expenses, we can budget that into 2013.
Exactly the plan.
Thanks.
Okay, so we will have Attorney Lell bring us back a revised resolution for a future date. Because of the October 1, I don't know that it's necessary to have it by next week. If he can, that's fine. We'll move forward. But we do have until the October 1 date to enact the proposition. So, all right.
And did you want to entertain a motion coming out of the executive session?
If there is a motion to be had, I would so entertain it at this time.
The verbiage of which? The motion that was discussed was I move the city council authorize staff to negotiate for the acquisition of the Galaxy property easements on the terms recommended in the executive session.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Pettibak. Any further comments or questions? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you
for the courtesy.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us tonight. I appreciate it. Okay, so we're going to get back here on track. Back to our study session topics, first of which is the Sky Meadow and expanding water services. Jacob, thank you for your patience. Appreciate having you stick around while Ms. Feilberg's talking. Do you have anything you'd like to start out with?
There you go. I'll give the floor to Brad.
All right.
That was your point.
This is expanded water service area from the Sky Meadow Water Association.
So for at least the last 8 years, we've been discussing water service boundaries with the Sky Meadow Water Association. Various scenarios. So I was having a three.
Yes.
Okay.
That's it?
Yeah.
I didn't know you. So stupid.
Various scenarios have come up, and us taking part of it, you know, all sorts of different scenarios we talked about. They are concerned that the reason this we're being driven for this is because the city's desire to eventually have part of this area here for industrial use, at first have it added to the urban growth area and then annex it for industrial uses. That's got currently in our current comprehensive plan to move out into this area. We are concerned that if it's in a alternative water district or water association, that any development down there could be held up by them not being able to provide water service. We recently received a letter from the Sky Meadow Water Association that said, why don't you just take the whole thing? With a couple of caveats on that, and that's what we'll talk about in the executive session. So the blue line, you can kind of see, that comes down right here and up here. And there and around like that is our current water service area. The red line is the current Sky Meadow Water Association service area. The blue parcels are the actual customers that they have. And as you can see, there's one customer they have that is way outside their service area. That basically is right before you get to the bridge across the slough, before you get to Snohomish. That's where that is. The big white house is right there. On the way to Snohomish. So there's approximately 416 customers, more or less, about 19 miles of pipe. So we're going to talk to you about whether or not you want to do this and what it takes, and we'll talk about costs and that in the executive session, because that's about basically acquiring property from them. So do you have any questions on that general stuff?
Councilor Davis. Councilmember.
So we did this a couple of years ago. We were in some negotiations. We just kind of heard some cross pipes and connection here and connection there. And so essentially now we've moved on to you guys can have it, you know.
Correct.
And here are the terms for it.
So right, yeah. The big thing that they are talking about is they don't want to pay utility tax to the city. but we can get into the negotiation parts of that when we get into executive session.
A little bit later.
Yeah.
Sure. There's also the, because I'm reading through there, and the rate that we charge customers outside the city limits already is, there's an additional amount there.
Right. One and a half times.
Which would be applied here in this area as well, at least according
to what
I thought I read. So. But other than that, we were already connected pipe-wise.
Right, all the water that's going there is coming through us already.
And so from that standpoint, there's not a bunch of public works.
It's just that if there's more pipe that has the tendon, wears out after a while. We're not sure exactly what the status of all their pipes are. So, here it is.
Thank you. City Administrator Bradley.
Thank you, Mayor. One of the things that wasn't pointed out that I would like to bring to your attention is it isn't just about the boundaries, it's about water quality for all these customers in this area. For years there's been problems out on Tester Road, the if you go past the high school, that side of Tester Road, the nursery had come in many times concerned about water volumes, water quality, those types of things. In our system, if we're connected and we take that over instantly, we're able to make some minor adjustments that will cost money, but it will increase their volumes, increase water quality. We have staffing that work full-time. We actually have two full-time water quality staff that Sky Meadow doesn't currently have, so we're going to be able to do things that they currently, these customers currently don't have access to. So again, water quality is important to everybody, and I think that's an important aspect of this as well.
Councilor McKibben.
Thank you. So I know we're not discussing the pricing take this on, but a couple things that I read in here were right now they purchased about $120,000 worth of water from us. You guys estimated revenues about $150,000 to $170,000. They currently have one FTE working. Do we foresee that we would have additional staff cost taking on, this, and how much piping? It was like 17% in total lineal footage of all that six small water reservoirs. What's the maintenance cost too? It's not just purchasing, it's also looking at maintaining this and then additional staffing costs, and if that's our estimate of revenue. So
I think that's most appropriate in the executive session, because that's about how much it's going to cost us versus what rates they get and things like that. So
because this to me is more of just making the decision of whether it's a good to do it as far as the maintenance of it long term, not the pricing of the property right now.
We can talk about it afterwards.
Okay.
It's not just so we don't tip our hand for negotiation
those
purposes
just
later.
Questions that I had. So
okay.
Thank you.
That would fall under potential liabilities that exist that would affect.
Yeah, possibly it affects how much we pay them.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I was I misunderstood. I did say we were not going to have another executive session. That's what I thought. What I had heard as we were talking. But you're recommending that we do need to go into the session.
Just we didn't need an attorney here because it's not potential litigation. Yeah. It's pricing of property. So.
And I'm sorry, I had one more question. If I still have.
Certainly.
It said on there that they had cash reserves. Is that something we'll discuss
all
of that stuff?
Yeah. I was just going to say my apologies. I didn't think we were going to have the executive session. And so we went forward with the topics in order. There's still a gentleman in the audience here who's
pop off and come back if you'd like. Yeah,
that's going to be my recommendation.
Okay.
Let's get through the rest of the items and come back to this if you're okay and have the executive session at the end so we can allow for the audience member to.
Well, Lauren's actually from Sky Meadow, so
okay. Well, then he's going to have to. Okay, then we won't have you wait, and I apologize. I couldn't see who was behind there, or behind Paul, and I can't see anything at this time of night. So, how long do you need for executive session?
10?
15.
Okay. We can always extend.
All
Always optimistic.
Yeah. Okay. So then we are going to go into executive session for the purpose of pricing the property. And that executive session will be for 15 minutes. And session. All right. Councilmember Camp has made a motion to extend past 10 o'clock.
Second.
Second has been made by Councilmember Hanford. All those in favor of extending past 10 o'clock say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'll let the record show that Councilmember Cutback was out of the room at the time of the vote. All right, we will move on to the 2013 Comprehensive Plan Amendment requests. And this is an overview, correct?
Yes.
And you have exactly 2 minutes, so go.
Start the timer.
We talked about that already.
Okay, good.
More trouble. Yeah.
Second
thing.
Comp plan amendments for 2013. We have basically four items for the potentially for the docket. I'm sure you've all read this. The first is our intent is to go through the current comp plan and do some house cleaning, take care of inconsistencies and some clarifications, and just basically do a lot of cleanup, which I think will be a good step toward our effort in rewriting or updating the entire plan for 2015. It's really, it's all about text changes and deleting things that are still in there that don't belong, like the airport overlay zoning map. It's a zone map, some things like that. The other one came up earlier about the possibility of the gateway districts. And our intent there is to, you may recall last year we docketed the West Monroe land use subarea that triggered by the cable park and some other changes that may be happening around Lake Tyne Industrial Park. Well, what we think we'd like to do is transform that into a much wider gateway, considering gateway districts, east, north, west, and southwest are being the main gateways in the city. And we haven't really scoped out any detail, but thinking about things like setting aside some specific areas, which may or may not lead to zoning regulations, but specific areas that identify the community. They say, hello, welcome to Monroe. The adventure starts here. This is the beginning of this city. You know, give people I like to say that you need to say hello and you need to say goodbye to everyone that comes through in and out of Monroe. It might have to do with looking at what's the uses are that we'd like to encourage or permit. Are there certain treatments that should be done and some allowances for some special signage, streetscape? And it could get into the down level of zoning regulations as far as the types of uses or the site standards of how you develop them. And perhaps even some level of design standards, some light level of design standards, mostly to encourage the kind of quality or image or type development that we want to see as the first impression of Monroe. That's what that one's about. The other two, or the third one is more routine, it's the annual system plan updates, you know, the water, sewer, and so forth that we do every year on a regular basis. And the last one being on, there's been some discussion lately about the the school mitigation fees and having the city match what is typically done in terms of impact fees of being at 50% rather than 75% of the that goes to the developers, builders, residential, primarily single family residential. Those are the, in a nutshell, those are the four items that we have potentially for the docket this year. We did not have any citizen initiated amendments, and you know, we may be bringing back East Monroe, depending on what action is taken. That would be a, you know, a continuation of a, or a redocketing by the city of the East Monroe amendment. I want to say that the applicant would not be eligible to redocket it because it's the same request, but the city can take action to docket and reconsider, redo that amendment. So, questions? What can I add here?
Councilor Aguirre.
No, thank you. Expanding the river boundary, things like that, that's part of the 2015 county, not.
Yes.
For example, if we're talking about Southwest or perhaps where the new Monroe Adventure Park is, things like that, people, you know, there's been talk about, hey, they'd like to be in the city. That kind of stuff is, we have to wait for that periodic update.
Yes. This would be a first step where we start thinking about those areas,
right.
And that's going to feed right into the 15 update.
Next thing on the agenda.
But yeah, I'll wait till
next on the agenda. Logically,
yeah. Because specifically with Southwest, we can create we can go forward with creating a concept of the district or the gateway district, mm-hmm. without actually having that as part of the cities, so that when and if we are able to expand our GMA and annex that portion into the city, we it's done. There's
right.
no debate, so it's really being very proactive in that. It's specifically with regards to that area.
Part of this is crafting some kind of vision for the gateway districts that gives us the basis for why we want to expand here or what we want to expand to, and then that gives some justification rationale for the comp plan update and the zoning regulations. It's really the first baby step in that process, but the more we do up front, the more effective it will be.
And I think having a vision or a plan, like Paul said, what we want to do down there will help with the county process of them going, well, let's just, you just want to have more land because you want to be bigger as opposed to actually having something to do there.
If I may, along with those gateway districts, may want to consider, give a little bit of thought to this with regard to perhaps major gateways and minor gateways. When you come into town on Woods Creek or Chain Lake, or it's still a gateway into the city. And with regard to signage, I love signs, and I love old, you know, small towns with you know, Monroe elevation 50, you know, whatever it is, and whatever the population is, you know, just whatever. Welcome to Monroe, yeah, or thanks. And that makes sense on a major one. But and there are, you know, you're entering Monroe city limits signs currently, but they're kind of, quite frankly, I think we can do better than that. So, you know, I'd love major ones and maybe minor ones. So something to consider in the future, but
right.
Would love to incorporate that as you're, you know, thinking through, you know, as we're going through gateway stuff. Consider, you know, all the entrances in the town. Yeah.
I was thinking about Highway 2 the other day.
Yeah.
You come in from the east, you hit the major entryway.
Yeah.
You're coming into the city. Then right away you hit Main Street. You hit Lewis, it's another one. You hit North Kelsey, you hit 179. There are some other
minor
points of decision,
yeah.
That and you should get some sense of direction, each of them, especially on, say, Main Street to identify downtown. I mean, first time I go through Stonehenge or drove through Monroe, I blew right past downtown, had no idea. It's on Highway 2, but we need to be able to catch people's attention and say, hey, this is over here. And that needs to happen within, as well. I mean, the three outsiders, that's the big announcement. And then as you come through town, you should have minor gateways or clues as to what's happening inside. So it keeps giving you some direction. And it keeps reminding you that I'm in Monroe. It kind of builds that Build a sense of pride.
Building a sense of place, and that's ultimately what I've talked to in the past about, you know, expanding the Old Town numbering system to the rest of the town. And certainly there are costs of changing the signs, but you know, it goes towards that. Where are you in relation to Monroe? Not where are you in relation to Everett? You know, you're in Monroe, so where are you in relation to what, you know, what's going on here? So, thank you.
All right, who had 10:15 for Councilmember McGeary to bring up the numbering system?
Well, I already got denied by the post office.
Again. All right. Councilmember Hanford?
Yeah, I'm just at Highway 203 there has another major one. That's not on my own, like Woods Creek. That's very major, so.
Do a south gateway also?
I would, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. East 522 is a, in terms of number of cars, is a pretty major inner point.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And that is a kind of a standalone entry coming from the south. I mean, they're everywhere. But the intent is to identify those and greet me when I come in and when I leave.
Any objections to any of the proposed council in agreement with our staff is suggesting here? Otherwise, we'll move on to the 2015 portion of the discussion. Okay, then we'll move on to the 2015.
Okay. So after we do the while we're doing the 2013 and the 2014 comp plan amendments, we're also working on a 2015 periodic update to the comprehensive plan, which is the big one. Basically, the main thrust of that update is the population projections and employment projections that are developed for Snohomish County by the Puget Sound Regional Council. And the Puget Sound Regional Council will give Snohomish County a certain number of residents and a certain number of employees for the horizon year of 2035. And then they've also decided that they have several levels of development. They have rural, they have small cities, large cities, major cities, basically, and they decided how much of growth each of those different groups get. We're in the large city category. And so they're going to give, when they find out what the numbers are, they're going to give those large cities a certain amount of growth they can get, and then those large cities amongst themselves have to fight over who gets how much. When this was done in 2003 for the 2005 comprehensive plan update, the city council chose basically the middle. There was a high, medium, and low growth rate or number of people at the end of the year or the end of 2025. City Council that time chose the middle path. And so we're looking for some direction while Paul's off at those meetings, arm wrestling with people. You know, should we say, no, we don't want any new growth, we're happy the way we are, you know, we want lots, or we want it somewhere in the middle. And so just sort of a sense of what the council's looking for the next 6 or so months when they're out talking about those kind of things.
We've got a couple quick things. The updated buildable land report, the amount of land available and the resulting capacity, it will be finishing up this fall. And there's this allocation subcommittee that meets again first week of September. And that's when we really start zeroing in on trying to allocate these allocations. I believe the county in general at this point is going to be pursuing more of the middle average in terms of the first forecasts or set of allocations. And then, like Brad said, the question here is, do we want to pursue a more aggressive level of growth as opposed to some other places? And I think we can document between now and then some pretty good basis for growth. Or rely more on the what is called the average, the middle of the average rate of growth, and how we move to accommodate that.
Would you say that the position that we've taken in the past in going after more of a medium or average growth has actually come back to bite us a little bit? I mean, today we're, you know, we've had discussion in the past that we're 1,000 residents short of expectation. Is that a result of not being more aggressive than what we could have been? So, in other words, a more aggressive doesn't mean that we have to grow that much. It just means that we get the probability of a Southwest expansion is more favorable.
Yeah, actually what it means is once they divvy up how many people and how many jobs you have, then they look at the housing the housing inventory. It says right now you can get, just for wild numbers, this means absolutely nothing. Say they said we're going to get 10,000 more people by 2035. We can only, the current zoning classification and urban growth area size, we can only fit 3,000 of those. So somewhere you have to come up with 7,000 more people, which is what basically the comprehensive plan update does. So do we increase the urban growth area? Do we, zone all of downtown for, 20-story high-rise condos? That kind of thing. And that's where that works into. So, what do you want the city to look like? Do you want to have more density? Do you want to have less density? That kind of stuff. And so that's where really that leads to. And I don't think really the reason we're short on housing units is because we never followed through on when they said you have this many people. We never did the rest of the process of changing the zoning and things like that, or going after annexations in order to get those properties in the city of Monroe. And then we had the whole economic thing that sort of stopped everything from growing anyway. So because initially we actually were exceeding the projections earlier on, and then we were going good, and then everything kind of went down. So
your recommendation, though, is more aggressive.
It's more aggressive, yeah. From what I've seen, at least where we've been headed has been basically more aggressive for economic development, especially in the employment area, which is what we want the Southwest area for. It was basically for industrial. So, and that would be the big thing, is that if we come up with a forecast that says you've got enough room for all the jobs you have, there's no way the county will let us expand the UGA for industrial.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to take the middle approach 10 years ago really harmed the city any, because the last several years there's been little or no growth. And that's changing very quickly now. And we're beginning to see it in more and more submittals. But what it comes down to is that with this updated buildable lands report, that will say we can build and accommodate this many people, and we're going to be short. So, hopefully that's going to trigger some consideration for expanding the urban growth area for either population and or employment. But it's playing that balancing game of here's what we can build and here's what's projected. So if there's enough of a gap there, then we'll be able to push for more territory. That's what I understand. And I know this becomes it's a very unclean,
it's massive,
combobulated process. Yeah, it's not.
Too many planners,
Throw a bunch of planners in one room, and what do you got? You got chaos.
Councilor McGee.
Thank you. I was going to say I would be in favor of doing what we've been doing, the aggressive strategy. I think makes sense to. Based on what I've heard, it builds a case for expanding those UGAs like we want to, which then is going to allow us to better meet. We're already behind. We're going to be more behind when this comes out. I don't think that really gives us a choice other than to do it that way. But in the direction we've been moving with the economic development, we want to bring employment. We want to bring jobs here and. Pursuing this kind of strategy plays, in my mind, plays right along into those things that we're trying to do. So, more people down. I think when we get 150 houses, I think was the.
It's going to be more than that.
It's going to be even more than that. So, we're well on that way, and so I think from that strategy, if you're looking for a direction, I think the aggressive one is the right one. And given that we're about to see an upswing in the economy, we're starting to see that, and again, the sky metal water, we'll talk more about that, but the possibility there as well. I mean, all these things, I think, work together to move in that direction, which I think is good for us.
One other thought that we have been proactive in reaching toward filling that gap. We did a lot of work with the West Main Corridor. We intensified the number of potential potential units and employment in that corridor. We're pursuing annexation of Roosevelt Ridge, which may or may not pass. But the city hasn't been sitting back and going, we're not doing anything. I mean, I think being proactive about trying to respond to that gap will be in our favor. And we've had more and more business moving into the industrial park. We're becoming up short on that commercial industrial space. So I think we have some things that will give us a better basis to get what we think we need.
Councilmember Kennedy.
Thank you. It sounds like from what I'm hearing that the aggressive strategy gives us the most flexibility to expand our urban growth area and whatnot.
I think so.
Are there any downsides? If we don't meet targets, are there any downsides? No downsides? And no penalties, no downsides, no, hey, I mean, if there's not, then I don't know why you wouldn't do.
I mean, like you said, it's messy. But the MDB is supposedly you're supposed to work towards that. So I mean,
yeah.
if you're going aggressive, it will, you probably at some point have to increase densities like we've done on Main Street and things like that. So change the density of some of the larger lots in town to smaller lots so people can, cut their backyard off and put another house in there, that kind of stuff. So, it could end up having the result of changing the character of the area.
So if we don't get to expand, that might be one downside, is that we're left with changing
the same number of people
density.
The same spot, yeah.
Okay.
And, because that's also the other thing about, part of the urban growth area concept and the whole growth management in general is to stop urban sprawl, so they're more likely to, want you to stick it all in the same spot rather than make your spot bigger.
Well, in some of our plans, like the downtown but the Al Borland area,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we have it set where it's commercial but then residential
right.
above,
right.
and things like that are already kind of set mm-hmm. in our plan to help with that density.
One of the downsides to over allocating growth, population and employment, is your capital facilities plans then have to be built
match that
to support that. And if you over allocate population, then your transportation costs, your water costs, your sewer costs, all those have to be beefed up to support a population that may or may not have. So if we blow it up and say we're going to grow to 60,000 people over the next 20 years, Lake Stevens has that very problem right now. They have to grow because they built their capital facilities and spent so much money on their capital facility. They have to be able to pay for it. So there's a financial aspect to this balancing act too. Part of the buildable lands report is the reasonable measures program that's built into the comprehensive plan and the countywide planning policies. In order for additional population to be allocated and additional employment capacity to be allocated, cities have to go through a process of reasonable measures saying, okay, we have looked at rezones, we have looked at land use changes, we have looked at annexations, we have tried to do all these creative things, we've allowed for boundary line adjustments and planned residential developments in order to create more density. Once you've accomplished those things and you can show that to the overlords of the planning crew, then that population allocation employment allocation comes more easily to the community. So, particularly with growth in the southwest corridor, the Nordstrom Estate property and the property up towards the old rock quarry, that's, I think, where we would like to have direction, I think, to aggressively go after that part of the area with plans of creating over the next 20 years an industrial and commercial center in the southwest corridor that pays dividends to the community. So.
Thank you.
Councilor Williams.
What's the scenario that you gave us here? It just says one possible scenario. Is this a aggressive growth? What's the difference between aggressive and moderate?
They haven't decided yet. This is the first rough draft from the regional growth strategy. RGAS that came out. So this is the first blush of the planners from the Puget Sound Regional Council. And so over the next few months, they'll be refining that and deciding what they're going to do.
So we just tell them basically our strategy, and they fill in the numbers?
Well, they're already coming with a number from down there. Okay. At Puget Sound Regional Council, what they are going to allocate the county. And then within the county, it gets divvied up inside the county.
Sure.
Okay. So, we'll say, Lake Stevens, you don't want any more people, we'll take them all. Or whatever it is.
And then as far as...
Lake Stevens may say they want them all, and then we have to fight over who gets them. So,
as far as the, if we're not meeting our goals and things like that, do we have the option to... If we couldn't meet our goals from like the job side, and we weren't allowed to expand the urban growth area, are we able to say, well, we're going to change the zoning and Main Street can have high rises on it, and then all of a sudden we have more potential there? Is that all it takes, or do we actually have to have the buildable area sitting there ready to develop? Like, how it seems like that's kind of a real easy thing to do if you're not going to meet your goals, is just say, well, we're going to change our zoning. It might not be practical. I mean, not too many builders are going to come and just tear down a city block and then rebuild the high rise. But are we allowed to do that type of stuff?
And that's what the smart growth people would have you do, is rather to expand in acreage, you expand vertically and compact, shove more people into smaller boxes. That's that versus expanding your urban growth area, going out into green fields and having inexpensive sprawl, if you will, out into the rural area. That's the catch-22. And that's what the whole comprehensive plan wrestling match is all about, is containing the growth of the cities, particularly the island cities in Snohomish County, Lake Stevens, Snohomish, Arlington, Monroe, Stanwood, Sultan Index. Keep those towns constrained as much as they can and force that vertical lift versus what's the practicality of City of Monroe building them, the Sockeye's buildings are tallest structure, three stories. What are the odds of us getting that 9-story structure?
Well, if we could ever get our zip codes changed, I think Councilman Gehring would think we're going to have the floodgates.
We could do anything.
Our population would look larger than that, I guess.
It is a bit of a catch-22 that way in terms of growing out versus infill. Realistically, there's a very limited amount of redevelopment or infill that you can do. You can't take the whole central part of Monroe and intensify it. So we're going to build twice as many units as there are here now. It just can't be done.
But the infrastructure is not going to support that either.
Well, look at that.
It's not going to support high rises, right?
Look at the real minor dust-up we had over talking about Hill Street extension in order to create infill in two locations, two big lots, Memorial Marshall Field and Peaks Park at that site, and then do a street extension. Now, that's classic urban planning to create a higher density situation inside the city, fill the city up from the inside, densify it, create urban amenities, create more rooftops to provide customers for businesses that are doing business in town, and create that center of mass. But look at the politics involved in just making that discussion, having that discussion. Now think about having that on what we're doing is looking at on a much broader level of the county process, because every city's having that same conversation. If you lose the battle during the buildable lands up report update and at the 10-year update, and your city ends up with no additional acreage but additional population allocation and additional employment allocation, then suddenly you're in a tough spot, because then you're forced to make those higher density decisions. So having a good growth expansion plan in combination with a focused effort to create more density and more infill in your city to utilize your acreage in a more efficient way. That's the game that's played. It's not an easy game either.
Okay. Moving forward, progressive.
Who is the SCP rep from the council? Who's
what? Snohomish County.
Snohomish County.
SCP is me.
Oh, that's you?
Yep.
Okay. You're a guy.
Jason's the backup now. Councilor Kadovac was the backup for. I think you got a certificate. Didn't you get your certificate?
Yes.
Yeah, I did attend one meeting.
That was for last year. But she got her certificates. Tony Ball did, too.
More than enough.
Backup.
Nice work.
Not very good backup.
I was just looking at your certificates.
I was looking at them, too.
All right. Okay, then we, you've got direction. We look forward to some more reports on that. And with that, we'll move on to Mr. Palka and the discussion regarding coffee stand regulations.
Okay. We've received complaints over the last 2-3 months, and more so just recently. And it's a difficult subject. So on the one hand, there's this perception by a number of people who have complained that this is the wrong image for Monroe. They don't want their kids seeing what they are allegedly seeing in terms of these underdressed baristas, and can we do something about it? Well, what it comes down to is an issue of a couple of things, maybe. Is these young women that are the baristas that are scantily dressed, it's not illegal to walk around town in a bikini. But the our code does establish some minimum standards for coverage, for clothing. And the question becomes, are any of these baristas actually improperly dressed or undressed to the point where they're violating the municipal code? And it could be some form of indecent exposure or what might be considered lewd action based on state law. I've had basically one person that complained very explicitly about what appeared to be an absolute violation of nudity or indecent exposure. There's no documentation. I've had other people that are just upset about the fact that they're in a bikini or not fully dressed. So one of the issues is there a problem of exposure? And in talking to one of the owners, with Giovanna Edge, who is here tonight, she asserts that they're not doing anything wrong, that the baristas are dressed just fine. And we don't have any basis to contest that. And part of the problem, if we decide we want to try and track these stands or monitor them, we have to be careful that it doesn't become a form of harassment if we have people monitoring these stands, going up and checking on the state of dress of the barista. The other possible venue is trying to decipher whether what they're doing is some form of adult entertainment. You know, what they're doing, they're selling coffee, and they're fully permitted, entitled to sell coffee at these locations. It's a business. Then the question becomes, if they are indeed scantily clad, are they doing some form of like exhibition or something that would be considered adult entertainment? And that's pretty hard to define. Because the primary purpose of what they're doing is selling coffee. Never mind the clothes. That's what they're doing. And I think it would be difficult to really prove or even document or try and infer that it is adult entertainment, which should not be happening in that zone, which should happen within the industrial park. So really what it comes down to is that, you know, maybe there are some potential violations of some form of state law related to exposure, or maybe to local codes related to the clothing or adult exhibition. As I said, there's no documentation. It's kind of a he said, she said situation. And I'm not convinced that these baristas are violating the laws of exposure. It may be, but we really have no way of knowing. So in the legal sense, I don't think we have much of a leg to stand on without trying to gather more evidence somehow.
And is that a police matter at that point, Chief? Try to do an investigation undercover?
Poor choice.
There's are you signing up for that, Chief?
We have responded to, I believe it was one complaint, and didn't observe anything that would be a violation of the city code as far as indecent exposure or the like, as it's currently written. I totally, the lady this evening that was reading our city ordinance, whatever, we read city ordinance too, we take the opposing view as this. I believe our legal advisor at this point.
So I think the message is that this establishment is allowable under law. However, should there be any evidence of misconduct or violation of both city and state ordinance and law, the city will do everything they can to enforce those to the fullest extent.
That's where we've been. That's where we're at. The larger issue is if there are a number of people that see this as a problem or a real issue from whatever their viewpoint is, does that then become a problem for the city? We may not be able to change the business, but I don't know if there's really any action that could be taken legally. Because I don't believe they're really doing anything illegal. There may be some very, some infrequent instances where someone is underdressed, but until they're actually caught and repeatedly violating, it's like, well, don't go there. Don't buy coffee there. I went to the one on Main Street probably a month or two ago. I didn't pull up in a city vehicle. I walked up. And the barista, she was dressed just fine. It wasn't a problem, huh? But other people have, it's a he said, she said.
So your conclusion is that the business is what they're selling is coffee. Some might think with perks.
Oh, jeez. That's too late.
Others. Don't frequent because of that. But at this point, it's really a matter of market preference or market. As long as there's no illegal activity,
nothing that we can document and then take action on. I don't see that.
Okay. Councilmember David Davis Hamburg.
So a couple of questions here. Is it not legal for someone to take photographs of anyone?
Well, I was talking to the coffee folks when you're in the first executive session, and one of them was telling me about a stand in Everett some time ago where there was a county deputy who would go to this one stand three times a day, and this went on for months. And that would seem to be a pretty clear case of harassment. And the owner complained. This is the story. The owner complained to the sheriff, who shut down the deputy and told him to stop harassing.
Well, what I'm specifically referring to is in this email exchange between you and Anna, where she says her employees have been verbally abused, threatened, photographed by individuals, and then you responded, yeah, this is not acceptable, contact the police. As far as I know, you can take a picture of anyone you want at any time, and you can go to any business you want to let them know what you think about them at any time.
Right.
They can ask you to leave, and then you need to leave. But as far as I know, it's
I think her note also said that she wouldn't stand for this, and she would potentially press charges. And my first reaction was, well, you probably can't press charges because there's no
the chief can do this better than I can, but there's no crime being committed. Although there's a, you know, the threat and the yelling and the whatever it is. I don't know if it's one person or 10 people that have done this. But that's, I find that to be just totally unacceptable. But again, it's almost like the issue of whether the barista is improperly dressed. There's no legal basis to say, stop, you're doing something wrong.
Well, so that's the first thing. I would say there definitely needs to be a clarification about our First Amendment rights. As opposed to verbally abusing or threatening, then you cross the line. That leads into what you just said. If our code, it says nudity and it describes the state of nudity there with anal cleft and anal cleavage, I know by driving by on the main street there, right next to it, and by going through the grocery outlet, that I've personally witnessed that. So are you saying that if we drive through there, we need to get pictures to prove? I mean, what do you need for proof? You said there's no proof, you know, and people call and said there's inappropriately dressed girls, but there's no proof. But then we talk about, well, we can't harass them by taking pictures. It seems to me like we need some clear direction as to, and I don't know whose role that is. You know, I don't drive down that edge of town that often, but the few times I have, I've had proof. So I'm looking for answers on how we get to the bottom of this and not just say, well, it's all gray and there's nothing substantial.
No. I think that if I might, Paul, there, that this is where I think why I said look at the chief and ask the chief. I think that if we're going to go out and encourage citizens to take the law in their own hands and try to investigate matters, I think we're opening a Pandora's box in that respect, and we need to be careful in doing that. If for yourself you say that there is, you've seen that, others have said that they've seen that. This is where I think it comes down to, well, the chief and his investigative staff's judgment as to whether or not an investigation should be conducted. It also comes down to counsel on whether or not you believe that this is important enough to direct or to encourage the chief to begin an investigation. But I think from what I read in that was that, you know, I can see that people get very emotional about some subjects, and the last thing that I would want is to have people approaching this particular establishment, whether I agree with it, whether I go there or not, and boisterously expressing their opinion to the point that it makes the people, the young gals in the, which most of them are, the young gals in the barista, fearful of whether or not they're going to, you know, be under some sort of you know, attack or not. So to your point, Paul has looked at it, doesn't believe that there's anything. The chief has also given a consideration, doesn't believe there's anything going on right now. You may have seen some things. Where is it on their priority? How is it on this list? And if it's ultimately that important, then I think that investigation needs to be handled by the police department, not encouraged by council to have people go out and take pictures and approach and do things like that. That's just me personally here. I think it gets messy at that point.
If I saw the floor. Mm-hmm. So in the future, if someone were to see that violation, they would just call the police and report that. Is that correct? And then you would dispatch and go from there. So it's twofold. Yes, it's the image of our city and all that. That's the one thing that's not, you know, it's kind of hard to legislate by. But there's also this code where it's clearly being violated. So the question of the importance of it is important, and you don't want people going up and telling the girls that they shouldn't be doing that or taking pictures and all that. I'm not saying we should go bombard them. I'm saying that's free speech, and you should be able to do that if you want to. But if they're scared for their life or scared for being attacked, or just people talking to them, I've witnessed myself here about springtime before the time change, where it was dusk and I was going over to get teriyaki, and I drove through that parking lot, and the gal had come out and was getting something on the ground or moving some crates or something, and it was dusk and she didn't hear my car driving up, and she freaked and she was literally scared. You could tell by the look on her eyes. She was freaked because she was outside the stand and all that. So as far as worrying about people being attacked, there's already that fear that I witnessed myself. And so it is that by this law, it kind of leads into the fact of the girls being afraid for their lives and the image. So
I would think that, and defer to the chief, but I would think that one thing that would be necessary would be if people see something wrong, they file a complaint, and it's documented. We collect complaints. And if there's a trend and a growing number of complaints that begins to say, well, okay, there may be a problem here, as opposed to one complaint every 3 months. If there's some evidence that there is something happening because people are complaining, seeing things and complaining, it doesn't help for someone to say, you know, 2 months ago I saw this person that didn't think she had enough clothes on, but if nobody tells us, we don't know. So I think the more, if it's a problem, then people should be filing complaints documented to support them. And then maybe that'll give us some basis to start some kind of investigation.
Immediately, you know, not the next day, right after the observer.
Right. Question. Otherwise, we don't know if there is a problem.
Right. You said we track complaints. I just had a question on that. Data perspective, do we track unique complaints? And what I mean by unique is
a complaint's a complaint. We track a complaint.
What I'm saying is unique is from, if you're looking at a unique individual, meaning different people, or are you just, because I mean I can file 50 complaints from the same person, you know what I'm saying? Just from a data mining perspective, you're saying, hey, when you use the word trends, that sort of thing. So if we're tracking complaints, is it unique complaints or is it just complaints in the aggregate?
It's complaints by the address.
Okay.
And so we can call up the address, okay, and we would come up with 50 complaints. And in the complaint, it's who is filing the complaint, who's calling in. So that's how we track every complaint. And that's what I meant by complaints and complaint. We don't file it. But in our system, we don't. It's not listed as scantily clad baristas, barely there baristas.
Right.
It's a complaint at that address.
I got it. But the piece I was looking for, Chief, and I think you've answered, is that you. Can I just, if I submit a complaint on an address, let me ask it this way: do I have to give my name?
No. People usually do.
I'm just asking that because if we're going to be tracking trends or whatever to have an idea, is it really that big of an issue? Those are the words that are being used. I don't know if that, you know, if I can just call and, you know, it's on public record now. You know, hey, I want to influence, you know, a decision here, and there's trends, there's no whole nine yards. All I got to do is just call in an anonymous complaint, 50 of them a day.
You call 911, your information is going to come out.
Call so 911.
Yeah, that's where you would call. That's where you would call.
Okay.
And by the way, councilman, there are no anonymous complaints. Okay. We have ways.
We have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But it would certainly be better to have 50 unique complaints than 50 that, you know, it's probably pretty obvious that it's the same person.
Correct. Yeah.
Over and over. That doesn't represent a trend. That's just one angry person.
Yeah, because I mean, the piece that when I, you know, when you read this, people use their own filters on whether this is being violated or not. I mean, unless in the code there's pictures that say what is and what isn't, right?
Well, you're talking about the definition.
Yeah, the definition. Right. Everybody has their own, you know, filter of that. So sure, you have a manual for that, right, Chief? I'm explaining.
So we have ways.
He has a manual.
Well, I didn't see the email that you're referring to, but taking photos is not a violation of the First Amendment. The First Amendment is a freedom of speech. And photos from a public access location is not illegal. Sticking a camera in a coffee stand to take a picture of somebody is illegal. And an individual can be trespassed.
If it's inside the coffee stand.
If it's touching the coffee stand. But if the area is free access or access to the public, such as a parking lot. No, but if it's on private property, which a coffee stand is, that's what I'm getting at. If you stick the camera in the coffee stand, not you, somebody
sure.
else.
So driving up through the coffee stand, you order your coffee, take a picture, you're not in the coffee stand, you're in your car.
Yeah.
Absolutely fine.
That's open to the public.
Correct, yeah.
Not that I would suggest anybody doing that, but I'm just, you know, you need to have a clarification because...
That's what I was referring to.
Councilmember Kent?
Councilmember Burns.
At this point?
You over here?
Yep.
I haven't listened to this conversation, and my response to people who have the email, I mean, I've been pointing out to, and I am not an attorney, but it sounds like there are so many First Amendment issues dealing with this and business issues that I recommend that they contact the police department for anything they see. But I really don't think the city should be involved in a First Amendment case that I believe we would probably lose. That's my statement. Thank
you. So, Mayor Brigitte?
Yeah, the other one there, Denny's first came here. We had the same discussion probably 4 years ago whenever it came. And I think the city of Renton tried to ban them, and they lose. Cities lose every time because they're legally operating businesses. And quite frankly, they got more attention because that was actually better for them. And quite frankly, if you're not a supporter of those, actually ignoring them actually is the best way to do it. But with Kit, can I certainly understand your questions and sort of where you're coming from. And I feel that way as well. But again, you know, verbal abuse is never okay. You know, those kind of, I just don't think that helps. I mean, the kind of things that someone wants to take a picture of, that's fine, but I think contacting the police is the best course of action for those kind of things. And legally, we were advised in the past as well that there's nothing to be done. City abuses. When you try, when other cities have tried that in the past, they have not successful.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
One comment, the coffee shop does have a lease from the grocery outlet landlord. That lease is coming to an end, and just anecdotally, the landlord isn't too happy with the activities that's going on as far as not either. So, you know, there are a lot of different economic pressure, a lot of times is better than government pressure. And I would suggest that, you know, if you do have concerns about that, maybe you'd like to contact the landlord and just have a conversation with the landlord.
different approach, but totally acceptable in my opinion.
I have had some contact with the landlord for East Main, and they are actively watching the business. I think they tightened up their, for the entire center, their lease terms, so they're looking for a way that they might, that the coffee stand might make some violations, but I'm not sure how long their present lease is. But there's some concern on the part of the landlord and one or more of the tenants there.
Okay, thank you very much. Councilmember Gamble would like to recuse himself from the next discussion item, that is cable franchise agreement extension. And the reason being is that he works for the company which we are going to discuss the agreement extension. And so out of a preponderance of precautions, he is recusing himself and has now left the chambers. With that, City Administrator Brazel.
Thank you, Mayor. This is just a real quick introduction, heads up to Council that Comcast has asked for an extension with the cable franchise. We currently have one. It went into effect in 2008. It's a five-year contract, so it is up in 13. We are in cooperation with Sultan's, Snohomish, Lake Stevens, and ourselves. We all have the same contract currently. We share Channel 21, which is one of the benefits from the contract, and the other benefit that we get is free cable service to our city buildings. So nothing in the contract is proposed to be changed. They want an extension. We agree with that. It's federally regulated. We really don't do much of anything with it. The last time it was negotiated, it took many, many years, and we actually went through several negotiators. Unfortunately, both of the negotiators that were hired passed away during the process, which is odd, but true. So at any rate, they're looking at an extension. The city of Snohomish didn't like the model that was put together, which is included in the packet. The city of Snohomish has drafted a new agreement that has a little more verbiage to it. I did not include that as of yet, but I want council just to be aware of what's happening. We'd all like to go with the same agreement, same paperwork, so we're yielding to Snohomish to fight that battle with Comcast. Should that agreement be approved, it'll come before you. And it was that model that Snohomish put together. I gave to Zach as well, so Zach has that. But I haven't asked him to do any work on it as of yet. So at any rate, it was just a heads up to let council know that this is going to be coming forward in the next month probably.
Councilor Kim.
Thank you. That was the point I wanted to make. But is 5 years a normal contract?
It has been, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
They just passed that franchise fee right on to all the customers, which is nice.
Through. And they've been real diligent about letting us know about all their increases and the cuts to the channels. We get those almost weekly.
How do we update Channel 21? Because the picture, you know, welcome. It's got the Monroe and the little mountains. And like, how can we get the new colors and the? Because it's all the muted.
Been working on that.
Oh, wonderful! That's awesome.
I still am not quite connecting with the process in that technology. But I have all the slides ready to.
What about the music? Believe it or not, I was watching 21.
Someone did say that's had a channel 21.
Could we wave out the window or door to see if Mr. Gamble or Councilmember Gamble is out there?
Thank you very much.
We're going to. We're not going to discuss all of the department reports. I'm hoping that you've had time to review those. But I do want to allow Mr. Popelka to address one item. And we said that we would do that during the council member reports.
and that is
Roosevelt Ridge.
Quick update. Everything is on track. We have one volunteer who is preparing a con statement for the ballot on the ballot. It looks like there will not be a pro statement. We have basically the county needs a person appointed by tomorrow if there's going to be anyone to write a pro statement. So at this point, we have a con, but not a pro statement that will be on the ballot. That's the update on that. And I should say that there can be a con or a pro. They don't have to both be there. The ballot can have a con or it can have a pro, but it doesn't have to have both of them. So it's not going to hold up anything.
So any citizen can sign up?
Yes. Yes.
You hitting that button?
I don't know. Oh.
Okay. All right.
We're citizens.
Okay.
So how much county citizens are all resident? Anybody can do it?
Washington State voter.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you just have to have their name by tomorrow, or when does a statement need to be done?
The statement is due by the 21st.
Of what?
Of August.
So this month, next week.
And then by the 24th, any rebuttal that wants to be added needs to be submitted to the county. So a statement by the 21st and a rebuttal if needed or desired by the 24th.
I'll do it. Can I do it? Or can a council member not do it?
Oh, you can totally do it. You're totally fine for you to do it.
As long as you don't use city resources.
And what I've been doing is referring people to Garth Fell at the county, because the county now takes over. The timing was too short for council to be able to appoint any pro and con committees, so the county will do the appointment. And
I will contact them first thing in the morning and pass through your contact information.
Okay. I'll contact you tomorrow to get the details of like where I sent it.
Okay. Before we get away from that, I'll get your address.
Mr. Saxon, anything to add this evening?
Pro.
No.
Chief, anything to add this evening?
I would like to thank everyone for attending the Night Out Against Crime. We had 100% attendance, so thank you. Not that I was keeping track.
You gotta make sure the chief's here. That's my first stop over there.
Mr. Feilberg, anything to add tonight?
I don't think so.
Mr. Feilberg, anything else?
No.
Very good. All right. We do have a business and action item, that is the consent agenda. Do we have a motion to approve?
Sorry.
Okay, a motion has been made by Councilmember Gehring and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. We do need to look at our calendar. I'm sorry, I skipped all over the place tonight. Draft agendas. City Administrator Bradwell.
Can I have two comments real quick?
Sure.
One thing that will be coming forward, Council, just so you have a heads up. In case you hear about it, City Everett is looking at increasing water rates. So we've heard 18%. That doesn't mean 18% to Monroe, but those numbers will be coming forward and will be a rate increase. I just wanted to make mention that we have made some small tweaks to reporting structure and who's doing what work in the planning department to keep rolling with all the permits and things that we're having come through. Nothing major, but I just wanted to let you know in case you have a rumor about that. It's all about efficiencies, but I can't speak highly enough about the team that we have, and that includes council. We've got so many cool things happening in Monroe. We've got a bunch of plats coming out of the ground that nobody else has, a lot of homes, potential homes. Plats have been sitting for up to 5 years, are ready to roll. So it's been an exciting couple of weeks, and I just want to praise council and staff. We've built a great team here, and we've got it going on in Monroe. So, draft agenda for August 21st. And announcements and presentations. We've got the library board. Public hearing. We've got a public hearing on 2013 comprehensive plan amendment request. We've got the consent agenda. Under new business, we have the senior center lease. Final action. I believe it's going to be an ordinance adopting indigent defense standards. And then we have a draft agenda for August 28th. And then we have two executive sessions.
We may add the resolution for
Okay, that's one other point, though. The gentleman who was talking about the land issue at Lord's Lake, I don't know how we would, where we would add that, but it sounds like time is going to be an issue if they've only got 30 days left to rectify it. So when could we put that onto the schedule?
We'll talk about it tomorrow, and we can totally add it. And again, we're in control of that deadline, so right. If we choose to extend it, we can certainly do so.
I'd like there's just some kind of resolution just so we know the direction that we want to go.
I only plan on having the student rep resolution for next week, and at that point, Ben should have some feedback from the district with regards to opening the candidates to all of the facilities and locations. But I think that what we did, if I'm not mistaken, I think what we were still considering was just high school level at this point. Is that correct?
Okay. Right. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Actually, Rob, I would probably be a better idea. Council member could have back had an idea just to specify sophomore up. Freshman would probably be able to
talk to the school district about that.
Yeah. Okay.
We can pass it on.
Last thing we have is we currently on our long-term schedule, our long-range schedule, we have a meeting set up for August 28th. In everybody's boxes tonight, we received an invite to the dinner, Fair Day's dinner. It is also on August 28th at 5 o'clock. The chances of council getting there to dinner and getting back here by 7 is kind of remote. Currently, we don't have anything on the agenda. We can play it by ear, see how it comes out next week if we need that meeting, or we can do a later start time, or we can just ignore it and whoever can make the dinner and get back, great. So I just want council to be thinking about that. We don't have to make a decision tonight. We can definitely do it next week.
Do we have to post? I mean, if more than a quorum show up at that dinner, do we have to post that?
The same day?
No. Yeah.
Yes. So going to Fred Meyer, I mean, you don't have to post when you call Fred Meyer.
No, what I just heard is yes, we do.
And how many days notice do we have?
We normally just do it. It's not that big.
But I need, well, yeah, I can just post that whether I've heard from anyone or not, I'll just.
It doesn't apply to church.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, that's it.
It's yours.
All right. Well, we had our sprint a couple weeks ago, a little bit of a marathon tonight. We want to thank council and staff as well for the discussion and dialogue. Since we are in kind of a study session thing, we don't need a motion to adjourn. So unless any council member cut it back.
Thank you. I just wanted to remind people I will be gone next week out of town, so I will not be at the meeting, and if there is a meeting on the 28th, I will miss that also, but I'll be back for if we have a meeting on the 28th.
Have fun. All right. So next week and the following week.
So don't vote on anything.
Okay, we are adjourned.
So what I heard is
well, he's still recording.